Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
I'm joined now by retired Lieutenant Colonel and Airport and Safety and Security Auditor Kevin Byrne. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, we will be talking about long-haul flights in a moment, but first of all, washing the seats.
I thought this was an April's Fool's when I saw it last week. I couldn't believe it. This day 2 weeks ago, Monday, 13th of October, Finnair, who fly to Dublin, they have two flights today, one leaving very shortly to Helsinki. They cancelled 20 flights on the Monday, and the next day they cancelled 20 flights more. They have 15 Airbus A321s. These are good, reliable, European-built aircraft. And 8 of them had to have inspections made after the seats were washed. Now, most turnarounds, to be honest, don't get washed. You know, you get a quick look, 25 minutes, and bang, we're gone again like that. And some of the aircraft have what you might call false leather seats. No animals suffer in the making of them, but they are cleaned from time to time. And when they cleaned these aircraft, they discovered they had used water and soapy stuff like that, which you think was grand. But somebody said, oh, no, that removes the certificate of airworthiness because, of course, they have fire retardant materials in them. And you have to use a special liquid, not your ordinary water.
Not to wash the fire retardant off.
Exactly. And they did, so they had to take the aircraft out of service, and it cost a fortune to lose 20 flights 2 days in a row. And they got 3 of the aircraft back on the next day by the 15th, and they were cleaned correctly, and somebody certified them as well. And one of the jets had gone off to Prague, so it'll be cleaned when it's serviced down there. But I thought it was an extraordinary thing, and the thought struck me, if you have contractors in who might not have read the manual of the aircraft, do you have this thing happening from time to time with other aircraft? Because one of the things you do is get people out in the case of an accident, and you want the fire retardant materials to work and give you time to escape.
Now, a couple of people who did escape were talking about US aircraft that went down.
Yeah, the USS Nimitz is off the South China Sea at the moment on operational use, as they do. The actual location is never taught because, you know, the enemy can tell you where you are. But they lost an AF-18 and a Seahawk in the space of 1 hour, which is highly unusual from that point of view. All 6 crew members, the naval crews, had been rescued, which itself is good news. But the statement said that they might have been caused by bad fuel. I have never heard of that made because the aircraft carrier carries their own aviation fuel. I've been on a car on the Eisenhower many years ago, and they showed us the fuel system, and it's very well looked after. It's checked on a daily basis.
So if 2 aircraft end up with bad fuel, what about the rest of them that are lined up for operations?
Absolutely, you have to return to base and stop flying from that point of view. But it's a very strange case, and they're having an inquiry, but you'll probably not get the results of that inquiry because it's going to be confidential.
It's going to be classified.
Yeah,
we want to talk about ultra long haul flights. We know what short haul is. It's a hop over to Tenerife. Well, is Tenerife short haul or long haul?
It's considered short haul, even though it's four and a half hours, depending.
So that would be the maximum
short
haul.
It would, really. It's inter-European from that point of view.
So Greece, Tenerife, those would be all.
Yeah, and it seems a long time if you're on a small jet, but we're talking about much more distance than that. We're talking about an agreement between ICAO, International Civil Aviation Organization, and the International Air Transport Association, and they define long haul as more than 16 hours or 13,000 kilometres, which is quite a distance around the surface of the world. You know, for example, Singapore to New York, or maybe Perth to London, they're about the limits of the moment. And we look back, look back in time and back to the future, as it were, because in the old days, they had, before the war, a flight between San Francisco and Pearl Harbor, which of course is famous in its own right. And they could do a non-stop flight in 19 and a half hours on an aircraft that had piston engines, was a flying boat, and had no pressurization. So it was a long, long haul.
No pressurization means it was traveling at relatively low altitude.
Yeah, below 10,000
feet. Which, of course, is much more work for the engines to do.
Indeed it is, but it's also going through the weather, and the Pacific can be a very dangerous place from weather point of view. So it was a very harsh environment for
all
the people.
And this wasn't fueling mid-flight or anything like that?
No, and once or twice they had to stop and land and try and get a ship out to help them from that point of view. But it was a long, long haul in those days because you're doing about 150 miles an hour. So there's great fortitude involved with the crew and or the passengers.
Now, Qantas operated what was called the double sunrise route. What was that?
Yeah, this was a thing, and it was flown from Perth to Sri Lanka during the war, during the Pacific War in the 1940s. It took between 27 and 33 hours, but stopped twice to get there. Now, they were flying a small little flying boat, Catalina, which we saw on an air show many years ago, where you interviewed a man called Dizzy Adicott, who was on this route, believe it or not. He was very old, elderly when we saw him in the 1980s, but he was a legend in his own lifetime. Literally, he was a great navigator and was very fond of these aircraft. They flew along at 150 miles an hour, Pat. And in fact, you'll see when some of the air shows, there was one in Bray quite recently, the Catalina, long wings, flew along the water and stayed airborne for over 20 hours. It's a long, long time to be on a thing like
but
that.
But we're not talking about hardship these days for ultra-long-haul flights. We're talking about luxury.
We are really, and now to be honest, I am not a business class passenger unless somebody else picks up the tab or get a free upgrade, which has happened from time to time. But this really started about 20 years ago, June 2004, Singapore Airlines, who are a leader in many ways, they wanted to go Singapore-Newark and they serviced it with an Airbus A340-500. That's the four-engined Airbus, which is common enough like that. It was an 18-hour flight, but of course it wasn't sustainable. Two things caused it there. The financial crisis took away the demand in 2008, and the rising fuel prices meant four-engined Airbuses are not terribly economical and they become less fashionable than they were before, although I've seen a few of them. So that stopped indeed. But they're thinking of bringing it back, more than Singapore Airlines, other airlines as well.
Okay, so what are the aircraft that are capable of doing these ultra-long-haul flights?
Well, we've spoken about the Boeing 787 Dreamliner, which I first saw many years ago in Dublin. Ethiopian Airlines brought one in. And then the Airbus A350 families. I've flown on both of them. Both have two engines, so they're quite economical. And they have a great range because they've got fuel-efficient engines. They're lightweight composite structures made, not of metal, but of the fibres, various fibres. And they've advanced aerodynamics done by computers. So they make the ultra-long-range routes viable and increasingly common because the running costs can be much lower than otherwise made the case.
So the routine routes that are now happening because of these aircraft, I mean, where to where?
Back to the future in some ways. Singapore, New York is operated by Singapore Airlines and the typical flight time is a taxing 18 hours and 10 minutes. And that was a record up to last week. But then Xiamen Airlines, whom I have seen in Shanghai and places like it, they claim that its flight from Fuzhou to New York is by far the longest at 19 hours and 20 minutes. But there's a caveat there because, of course, the Americans insist that this airline doesn't go through Russian airspace. If it did go through Russian airspace, it would take 1.5 hours from that. So, in fact, it's less efficient than it might be otherwise because of political considerations.
Now, we mentioned Qantas and during World War II, their double sunrise route.
Yes.
They have plans.
They have plans for Project Sunrise, which I think is quite exciting. They do Perth-London at the moment, and I haven't been on it, but they're connecting Sydney, which of course is a heck of a distance further, with London in some 20 hours. And there are people trying to book up already because it's going to be a non-stop flight. Now, they thought they might use the 787 I mentioned, the 900 version for test flights, but they in fact have decided it's more economical to go for the Airbus A350-1000, which is a lengthened version of the 350. And the routes will commence in 2027, probably. And they've ordered a dozen aircraft, so they're not yet delivered. So they're going to go into this new route with a brand new aircraft. Now, of course, Airbus engineers have to modify the aircraft to do this kind of route. And they have already an impressive maximum takeoff weight. It's a very, very heavy aircraft. And they're going to redesign the fuel tanks due to regulatory requirements. I presume the price of a business class ticket will not be cheap, but it'll be a bit cheaper to go down at the back. What it does is eliminate the stopover that you might have to have in the Middle East, which we're all common with
now,
at the moment.
Now, what are the challenges for the aircraft designers and for the airlines in operating these kind of routes?
Well, you have to make it such you can carry enough fuel, and you have to put in a thing called diversion. So if there's a bad weather at the point of arrival, you have to be able to go somewhere else. You have to have a huge volumes of fuel. I mean, that we're talking about, when I read this, I couldn't believe it. The uplift of the A350-900, the ultra-long range version, is going to lift up 166,000 litres of aviation fuel, or 44,000 US gallons, which are less than imperial gallons. That would, you know, fly the aircraft for 15,750 kilometres, about 10,000 miles of non-stop flying. That's very impressive for a commercial aircraft. And of course, you're going to have all a full passenger load and all the their baggage. So that's going to be an extremely heavy takeoff.
Now, you don't want your pilot falling asleep.
No, already we have spare pilots on some of these routes. You get a spare captain and he goes downstairs, he or she goes downstairs and has a little snooze. So you'll have multiple sets of pilots and cabin crew, and they'll work in shifts, and they're expected to get rest using the onboard sleeping quarters. There are actually little bunks downstairs. Okay. I've seen them on airlines, airliners, I should say, and they're strange, like little ships, I suppose. But passengers now are not going to have time to get on and off. In business class, you'll have a little light flat bed. That's okay. In economy class, you'll have a squeezed in seat like that to make most money. And you won't be that happy. You'll have to get up and walk around, and they'll have to feed you from time to time, and you'll have to walk to the bathroom and all that kind of stuff. So it's not conducive. So they're going to be have higher cabin pressure. We spoke before of the Boeing MAX, which is the latest version of the 737. Now, normally aircraft have an altitude of about 8,000 feet. So you're actually climbing 8,000 feet, which has effects.
Just to sit there.
Just to sit there. Even going to, as you mentioned, Greece or maybe Spain. But 8,000 feet is a climb. It affects your taste buds, believe it or not, and it affects the alcohol that may be in your system, which is why some people go a little bit crazy when they have too much on board. But the new aircraft will be better sealed, and they'll have an altitude of 6,000 feet. So you won't feel it that badly from that point of view.
Very good. Kevin, thank you very much for that. That is the future, ultra-long-haul flight. Maybe anywhere in the world from anywhere will just be one flight rather than stopovers. Kevin Byrne, who's retired Lieutenant Colonel and Airport Safety and Security Auditor. Kevin, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.